rollerblading race. This was on the 9th of June, 1862, on a summer's afternoon. We took the bus from Balmoras, and she was heavy laden. Away we went along Collingwood Street, that's on the road to Bladen.
Oh, my lads, you should have seen us gunning, passing the folks along the road just as they were standing. All the lads and lasses there, and all with smiling faces, gunning along the Scotswood Road to see the Bladen races.
Yo, what's good, ladies and germs, and we are back at it again with another episode of CHN Radio. It's your boy Elijah, and today I'm joined by a special guest. We're going to talk a little bit of Sandro Tonali, and to do that, I've brought in probably Serie A's most hated man on Twitter, Martino Puccio. Martino, how are you doing?
Oh, thank you for having me, man. I'm well. I hope you are too. Just found out that you're in Arizona. I'm like, yo, I thought you'd been East Coast the entire time, which was just really funny. But I'm good, man. Serie A's most hated. Yeah, I mean, probably up there, honestly.
It's insane. So I've been following Martino for a few years. Friend of the program, Roberto Rojas, like, connected us all a couple years ago. And so, like, it's just cool. It's honestly cool to see all the different opportunities you've had, first and foremost. Congrats. Martino's a really cool guy. Definitely follow him. We'll do the plugs in a second. But I do want to mention, there is no one who I think gets in more beef with people on my timeline than you. And it's and it's crazy because people will come at him. For one, Martino knows his stuff. Like, and I don't think you're, like, completely like, there's obviously bias. You're a Milan fan. But, like, everything I see you tweet, based off of what I've seen everywhere else, is not really that hot of a take. But people just are just mad that you're American and talking about Serie A. And that,
oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
It's hilarious. And, like, it to the point where, like, there's people who have memes of you. And it's – I don't know. But, Martino, let the people get to know you. So, who are you? What do you do? And then where can they follow you?
Well, my name is Martino Puccio. I'm from New York. Fan of Elijah's rival baseball team, the New York Mets. That's where I get a lot of my self-critique from my fandom of all my teams, because, like, being a fan of that team allows you to be really reflective and okay to critique if sometimes your club does something wrong, which, you know,
In
the past 10 years or so, 10 to 15 years, Milan have done a lot of wrong. I currently write for The Athletic as for sports betting, specifically with football, soccer, whatever you want to call it. And then I do videos on the side for other sports as well whenever I get interest for it. But, you know, as you know, with footy, it's you can just covering the European leagues alone is like is a hassle. And then you have to, what, NBA, there's college sports. So, like, it's a lot, but I try to do it. But yeah, and obviously a big Milan fan, that's where a lot of my content lives on my YouTube channel, and I make videos and stuff on there. I was just talking to Tom Bogert today about our guy, Florin Bulligan. So,
beast.
And potentially to Milan, but who knows about that. But yeah,
is Milan going to be the new Leeds? People are asking.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We already saw those comparisons, man. Like, I had my quote tweet was like, we just made a Champions League semifinal and now we're getting compared to a team that just got relegated again. Like, what are we doing?
American sports media is awful. It's bad. Cool. And then Martino, I know people can follow you on Twitter at Martino Puccio. Where can they find you on YouTube?
Same thing, Martino Puccio. Basically every other social platform is just my name, and that's pretty much it.
Boom. I love it. So let's get down to business. Newcastle have made one signing so far this window, and maybe they'll make more, maybe they won't, who knows. And I'd say pretty bold move considering the moves that Newcastle have made, let's say, the past 5 years. They went out and got Sandro Tonali from AC Milan for a reported fee of around 70 million euros. I've heard a lot of things about whether or not Newcastle paid too much. I've heard both sides of, hey, this may be worth more than that player is actually, this cost is more than what that player is actually worth. But also, if you're a Newcastle, and you have an opportunity to upgrade your midfield, I'm sorry, but Tonali is better than Joe Ellington, and he's better than Sean Longstaff, and he's better than Joe Willock. So, like, it's worth the investment on that alone if you are able to achieve what Newcastle achieved last season with objectively worse players in the midfield. I think it's perfectly great bit of business. He comes in, no idea what number he's going to wear. I don't care. There's a lot of, sure you might have seen this, Martino, there's a lot of pictures and memes going around because this man looks miserable getting off the plane and landing in Newcastle. It turns out that he doesn't smile a lot in general. So that's also funny. But
it's I associate him in that sense with him in that sense. I have resting like angry face. I was just like some girl was telling me this yesterday. I was like, I'm not upset. I'm just like, I don't know. I don't have to always smile. Like, it's not a thing. But so listen, I think a lot of people don't give the context of Newcastle, and maybe some Newcastle supporters gets offended by this, and I don't think they should. It's just the reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. When you're Newcastle, when you have not achieved anything of great significance in terms of winning trophies in a very long time, and you are not one of the big six clubs within England, you're gonna have to overpay to get a guy from AC Milan to go to your team. That's the whole point of as to why he's going there in the first place. It's a big point. Like, the project has done very well. You and I talked about it on the State of Play podcast when the PIF takeover initially happened. And this, I didn't think he would be taking one of our best players, but, you know, here we are. But anyways, like, just to get to that point, I mean, listen, you're going to have to pay a lot of money for guys these days. Lukaku went for a ton of money. All these guys, I mean, you guys paid a ton for Isak as well, who's a talented player in his own right. But, you know, it's a lot of money invested in general. So, like, that's just bound to happen. I think he made a great point in this. Like, he's clearly better than anyone not named Bruno in the midfield. Like, it's just, like, what are we
doing? Yeah. And he's younger. And he, I mean, yeah, there's just a, if you're Newcastle, there's a bajillion reasons to jump on this. And that's how the front office moved. Like, this was a long-term target, kind of a, if he's available, we'll definitely go after him. And very similar to how Isak and Bruno were signed, where they were names on the spreadsheet for years, even tracking back to the Ashley era, and our, the head of recruitment in Newcastle, Steve Nixon. There were certain names that he kept on the docket and knew that he would never sign, but kind of just was floating out there because it's kind of a, hey, I told you so. Like, I think, I want to say it was Mo Salah or Conte. I think it might have been Mo Salah. Early on, like, Steve Nixon had told Newcastle to go after him, and they were like, no, $5 million is too much. And that's the Ashley era in a nutshell. But anyway, I would agree with that 100%. I think that's just the stage Newcastle are in right now. They also don't have the other problem that they have, which is kind of a little bit different from other teams like a West Ham, who are kind of now trying to cement themselves as a firmly in the top eight in the Prem. So Newcastle, very well, like, it's very well known how much money is behind Newcastle. So like, inherently, there's going to be a lot of there's going to be overpaying for the right players, if that makes sense. Like, there's been certain situations where Newcastle have walked away because they know they're getting fleeced. But then if they like a player enough, they're willing to spend the extra 10 million, 15 million in bonuses or whatever. And the other part is, like, it's a 70 million euro fee, but I'm sure some of that is bonuses. Some of that is, there's a lot of different things. And that's the way I also want people to remember, is that when you have a fee like this, and there's already been reported, you know, fee can rise up to XYZ, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Just know if the fee gets to that point, you're probably going to be happy as a Newcastle fan. That means, like, oh, we've made it to the group stages of Champions League. Like, oh, the player's been here 3 years. Like, there's a bunch of things that are good if it gets to that final number. But enough about that. Let's hop right into it. Martino, if you could you just give Newcastle fans kind of a brief overview of Tonali? Like, where did this kid come from? What did he do at Milan? I know he was very, very much loved there. Let's set the table for what he is.
So one of the bigger prospects that Italy has produced in a very long time, especially in the midfield area, from the second that he was playing for Brescia, well documented that he was a Milan fan. He used to write letters to the club when he was a lot younger about how he always wanted to play for them. And it was such a big deal when they won the title last year. and how he played such a key role in it. Lots of game-winning goals there, obviously involved in goal contributions as well. Basically playing more matches than Bennacer did, who was playing more in the year before. So he really stepped up after a rough first year. The comparisons were always going to Andrea Pirlo just because of the hair, because he also played at Brescia. Pirlo famously played at Brescia when Roberto Baggio was there. If you ever want to like see a cool old football video, it's Pirlo sending a long ball forward to Baggio and he scores. Tonali does not play like Pirlo at all. He doesn't play like him. It's not even close. He's very much closer to a De Rossi or a Gattuso vibe. He is physically gifted as an athlete. Super fast player. Very strong. His technical ability is better than that of Gattuso's was. Not as great defensively. I think he obviously made a few more errors. A lot of people like to like go look up and they see defensive midfielder all the time. Tonali, in my opinion, is closer to a box-to-box type. I don't think he is necessarily, you know, just like a sit-back defensive mastermind. That's not the case. I think he's capable of it. He reads the game well. But when you put Tonali closer to goal, the better he is. I think he's personally underrated on set pieces. Some people don't enjoy his set pieces. But every now and then he does send in good ones. I think his shooting technique is pretty good. It's actually been vastly underrated in my opinion. And again, like coming off of 10 assists and two goals, like we're talking about a guy who also didn't have the best midfielders around him at this point because Frank Kessie left the club. So he had his best season when he had less help, which is incredibly impressive for a player of that age making the big transfer over to Milan, also the place where Pirlo played. He struggled in his first season mightily with Milan, as you could see with that. He didn't get too much game time. He was picking up red cards. He was struggling a lot, but he was incredibly young. And the amount of pressure that he had on himself just because of the comparisons to Pirlo and playing at Milan, just playing at Milan alone, right? There's immense pressure to perform. We're going to see that with Pulisic. But what happens with a guy like that who is Italian? There hasn't been many great Italian players at Milan in recent years. To do that and then to overcome such a difficult first season just shows his mental resolve. Tonali is also someone who always gives his best for the shirt. And he did that at Brescia too. It's not just something that happened with Milan. Probably put in more energy because he's like, it's like you're playing for your favorite team. Like if I was playing for them, I'd probably have a little bit more juice in me than if I was playing for Fiorentina, right? So that's just the natural way of it. And to be quite honest with you, his age, man, I mean, listen, he just turned 23. He is incredibly young. I don't think he's had too many minutes. He played a ton this past season, but again, it's a little bit different. There's more of a congested schedule. England's schedule fixture is obviously drastically different than any other league that we see on the planet, or any other FA on the planet. Yeah. So when you factor in that, listen, this is someone who isn't going to be scared of the moment. The pressure won't get to him. He's already played a match. He was great in the Champions League semifinal. I'm sure a lot of people have watched that. Probably one of the only like three good players for us in that tie. But man, I tell you what, he is a very likable player and person. Yeah. Because I know personally from some people that are in Milan Club New York City, his girlfriend contacted them and they met up with them. And last offseason, he came by because he saw the amount of love. And I've made videos for my past job where Tonali has like followed my page after it, or followed the page that I was working for. Because I was just talking about, I got so many more views from that video because it recirculated because of Newcastle fans. So I guess shout out to you guys.
Yeah, shout out to us.
I appreciate it. Yeah, giving me more views. I get, but it oh, what a stab in the stomach that was, because it's like, oh wow, great views on the video, what is it? And it's like, oh, it's the Tonali one. It's like, welcome to Nolly, you know, like the tune
of course
it's part of it. But yeah, man, he's going to be instantly lovable because there's going to be a 50-50 challenge coming up in August, right? Where whenever it happens, he's going to go in full effort and the supporters are just going to love it. They're going to fall in love, and it's so easy to like this player.
Yeah, and I think like there's a couple of things I definitely want to circle back to, but the going in for challenges, like that's Newcastle in a nutshell. I think pre you know, I'd say probably one of the more popular clips in Newcastle Twitter in the Ashley era was there was a match three-ish years ago. Rafa Benitez was still at the club, where it might have been 4 years ago then at this point. Jeez, we're getting old. Realized like Rafa had been at Newcastle for ages, where like it was just a sequence in which Newcastle players were just slide tackling and putting in crazy challenges for a ball. It was like just random, and nothing came of it. It was just literally a bunch of challenges back to back to back to back, like Matt Ritchie's getting dirty, all these other guys, and like Newcastle fans love that. They're like, oh, I miss these days, all that kind of jazz. But yeah, so I do think, like you said, with his tenacity and he's going to go in for those 50-50s, like he's going to be loved by the club. I mean, overall, and Newcastle fans, they are irrational at times regarding certain players, but I do think like they care a lot about players who look like they are working hard. Like Iosi Perez is a guy who was, honestly, if you look at it, pretty solid for Newcastle in his time there, but just never looked interested, and fans hated him for it. Whereas like Miguel Amarón is loved by a lot of fans simply because he works really hard. And I think like Tonali is in a prime scenario where, as long as he works pretty hard, he's going to collect that paycheck and he's going to be loved by the fans. Like, he's going to be fine. One thing I did want to point out is you talked about the misconception that he's a six, and I will blame FIFA for that, because for like the last five FIFAs, he's been a guy to sign and stick in as a CDM somewhere. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Milan played like a double pivot this year. He was like alongside another player. And you know, it's obviously gonna be a different system at Newcastle, where I do think he's going to be probably played as one of the box to box eights. There was also in The Athletic, they made this weird, not a weird, I guess it is weird. They dropped a weird nugget saying that Newcastle are going to try to do something like that's very unique and different. So I don't even know
whatever that means.
And Eddie Howe's like kind of insane, so I wouldn't be surprised if Newcastle do something like that's actually insane. I mean, for half the season they basically played a constant wing swap between like Joelinton and Joe Willock. Joe Willock being in the midfield or starting out wide, and Joelinton starting out wide. I mean, and just those two swapping back and forth, which is wild and weird. As it pertains to Newcastle, I would say, would you agree with the statement that he's probably going to play as an eight in that midfield? Bruno will probably still be that kind of last line of defense, and he'll have that freedom to really get in and around the box, make those dangerous runs, play in some decent passes, all that kind of stuff. Essentially, something similar to what Sean Longstaff did at Newcastle this past season, except for Sean Longstaff just doesn't have the technicality or the technical ability to really make the most of the chances he got, and then the ability to create for others. And it seems like, from what you've said, Tonali does have that technical ability to actually make an impact in the final third for Newcastle from the midfield.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like the double pivot thing was just something that Stefano Pioli just stuck with tactically because it was working. After the 5-0 drubbing against Atalanta a couple years ago prior to COVID, Zlatan arrived and they basically had to change up everything that they were doing. And the midfield had talent, but they went with the double pivot. They stuck with it because it's what worked best. It's not necessarily correlated to his skill set. I don't think it was. And again, you know how football is these days. It's not strictly like you can't leave this area if you're a defensive. Yeah. You know, like it's a guy's occupy space if someone leaves that space. And that's the way the sport works. That's how Pep Guardiola literally dominates the Premier League and all of football because of that philosophy. And I think that's going to be happening there in Newcastle. And again, there's nothing wrong with relying on him at times to have that sort of, you know, defensive reliability. That's all and well. But the closer you put this guy to goal, the better he's going to be. Because also, he's just going to be so much more active in the midfield. And when he's moving up and down the pitch, it's just he's a titan like that. Sometimes his touch could be a little mediocre. I will say that. That maybe might be a downside to it. He's not as great on free kicks as most people would have hoped. I think he's better on passing on set pieces than he is scoring them. And then, yeah, man, I mean, listen, Bruno, I would assume, would be the last line of defense. And with a great defensive midfielder, it just makes him so much better, because now that worry about, you know, Teo Hernandez is also another perfect example of it. That's the best left back in the world, in my opinion, but he's better when he moves forward. So when he moves forward, that means there's more exposure at the back. He's not going to have to worry about that at Newcastle. If you give the guy freedom and more responsibility to do whatever he wants in terms of creativity, pushing up the pitch, winning 50-50 balls and all that, that's just going to be way better for Newcastle. That'll also make Bruno's job a lot easier. Like, this is, I don't know too much about the Newcastle midfield history, and especially in the 21st century, but I can't imagine there's been a better midfielder, midfield core than what you're about to have this coming season. So,
agreed. I think a majority of Newcastle fans would agree with that, especially if you're looking at like Ashley era and beyond. I think this is probably the best midfield that Newcastle has had, and that's whether or not you buy the stock on Joelinton or not. And I think one thing you touched on is like his physical tools, and I will give Eddie Howe credit in this regard of like, if a player has those raw physical attributes of like they are fine, like they are athletic, they love getting after it, running up and down the pitch, those players, for some reason, that archetype specifically has thrived under Eddie Howe. And that's even going back to Bournemouth. Like, I think he just understands, like, I think he figures out what, you know, all right, you may not be, and again, Tonali is a little bit different because he's definitely more technically gifted than what we saw before, but from other Eddie Howe players that have a similar sort of like physical gifts sort of mantra, but he'll just, if you can do the physical work and you can press, you can get into the system, he will just work with you and make sure that the few technical aspects you want to focus on, you'll get the best out of. So, like, you know, a good example is like Miguel Almiron. Literally, I mean, MLS is a little bit different. I'm not going to pretend like MLS is a great league, but he dominated MLS, and then he had an adjustment period in the Premier League. And part of the reason he dominated MLS was like he was legitimately, when he was in MLS, the fastest player in the league. Like, just, he probably was, and that helped him a lot. It just, when you are faster and like you have more stamina than everybody else in the league, that's an advantage, whether or not the technical ability is there or not. And when he came to the Premier League, that was something that was clearly like it was something that it was exposed that, like, all right, yeah, you were actually, you put up crazy numbers in MLS because you were just more physically gifted than everyone else. And so Eddie Howe was able to take that and turn him into a more complete player. And the same thing happened with Joelinton. So I'm excited to see like what happens when you have a manager. And I don't want to discredit anyone who has managed Tonali before, but when you have a manager that's like, oh yeah, no, I love guys who have just the physical tools, and like I'm able to mold them into something better, I'm excited to see where that happens, like what that looks like with the player who already is very technically gifted, already is, again, an upgrade on the midfield. So I'm excited to see, like, all right, well, what's the next level of Tonali? Like, where does he continue to grow? And that's the thing that I think people kind of forget when they look at transfer values, is that like he's still 23. He hasn't even entered his prime yet. So we have no idea how good he's going to be in 3 or 4 years. And it'll be a situation where it could be, you know, a situation where people are like, man, they got him for 70 million euros. Like, that's wild. So we'll see. A couple more just quick hitters for you, Martino.
Sure thing.
What is something that you've noticed that Tonali does really well? And you think, I mean, regardless, you know, do you think it, like, one that you think will translate to the Premier League? But, and then in follow-up to that is, what's something that you think is going to be the most frustrating thing that we see watching him at Newcastle? So what kind of frustrated you with his time at Milan? And then what was something you're like, man, I'm so grateful that Tonali does this so well?
Well, in terms of frustration, when he has a bad touch or a bad pass, it's like really bad. It's really bad, and it'll frustrate you, but the frequency in which it happens, I mean, it varies. When he's having like a rough time, it's more noticeable than not. But again, I just point to growing pains as a player. Yeah. Like, it happens. you know, and he cut down on it a lot. I think defensive mistakes and picking up unnecessary yellow cards at times is something that we've seen from him. He's gotten a lot better and improved with that over time. Maybe the adjustment to the Prem will be a little bit more difficult because it is a more physical league in that sort of aspect. Serie A is obviously more tactical. It is physical in a different sense where people are just bad at fouling you. It's not much. So it's not so much like the strength side of things. But
it's,
yeah,
it's that, CONCACAF yeah. physical, where like CONCACAF is very physical, but not not for the
90s. Nineties basketball. It's like these guys are so tough. It's like Bill Laimbeer just like threw a right hook. That's not tough. Yeah. That's just a bad player. Like that's not Bill Laimbeer was a good player, but in that.
But also, like, I mean, this is an aside, but that's literally like. Like NBA Summer League right now, if you're an absolute sicko and you're an American basketball fan, you've watched some Summer League, like they have 10 fouls in NBA Summer League. And you can see like, oh, okay, so the fact you have 10 fouls is kind of akin to what they had in the 90s where you had, you know, your six fouls, but like you really had, you know, 10 to 15 fouls. And you're like, man, this is not good basketball. It's like when you're like, I can get away with just grabbing a guy instead of actually playing defense, you're like, all right, well, this is not good. But yeah, okay. So bad touch, definitely agree with that. And that's the other thing is that like that frustrates a Milan fan base or Milan fan base way more than it frustrates a Newcastle fan base because like we've seen, I don't even want to get into it, but like we've seen awful touches from players. Like Miggy still has a really, like at times, really bad first touch. Joel Linton, like when he didn't make the World Cup squad, I was very much on the boat of like, I don't think he deserved it because I'm thinking about every player in that Brazil squad that made the World Cup. And I was like, all of them have a better first touch than Joel Linton. And to be fair, to his credit, he has improved on that a lot, but it's like,
That's just one of those things. Yeah. Listen, and again, to like make a basketball reference, but it's like Jaylen Brown couldn't improve like his left hand dribble, but it's like, why are you in the pros with a weak left hand, bro? Like that shouldn't be a thing. Like, but like I love Jaylen either way. I think just whatever. That was a rough series. Don't want to talk about it. I did that to myself. So we'll talk about the positives with Tonali. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised with how physical he is and how great of an athlete. He really is. Like
this is music to Newcastle fans' ears. They love a physical guy.
He is a stupendous athlete. Like they had sprint speeds for Milan players, and obviously it goes with kilometers and all that. He was top three in the team. We're talking about Rafael Leao and Teo Hernandez in the squad. Like, those are some of the fastest players on the planet. So the fact that like he's right up there as a midfielder, so like you're talking about somebody who could be doing this for 90 minutes. He's going to be running more than either of those guys. So like the fact that he has that drive to win constantly, and sometimes that is sort of what makes him make bad decisions and rash ones. But again, you're just going to love that aspect of him. I think it's by far the most underrated part. It's definitely well known. It's like it's funny with Milan fans because they'll always look at the positives of a player so much so, especially when he's Italian and grew up a Milan fan. So, like, it's kind of hard for me to say, like, oh, yeah, he's underrated. And, like, no one finds him underrated that's a fan of the club. I think the underrated aspects come from rival fans or fans of other teams. Like, I got into it. Yeah, we talk about beef all the time. There was, like, this one guy who said that Tonali was just, like, overrated and not better than Kessie, even though Kessie was horrendous that last season. And he was citing like XG. And this is why I like despised it so much because he was citing XG. Meanwhile, Frank Kessie's goals all came from the penalty spot. So like it just couldn't have been a worst argued case in that sense.
Yeah.
But Tonali scores more from open play goals. We'll see how he adapts with the link up play and all that. But in terms of physicality, I don't think he'll have too much trouble adjusting to the Prem. I think he, in the sense that he'll probably just have to slowly figure out when to be properly physical and not, because it's just called entirely different than the game is in Italy. But we'll see. I think Eddie Howe is a tremendous manager. And the impressive thing I'd just like to say about Newcastle is this: anytime a club gets money to spend, and we've seen this in the Prem, right? Because those massive TV deals that they get, everybody has money. So everybody's able to spend, but we see who's good at spending and who isn't. Leeds, you know, West Ham struggled terribly this past season. Newcastle, I don't think they go crazy with the spending at all. I haven't seen that. They're spending within the means and the rules, and nothing has been outlandish. Yeah, maybe some of the prices are a little bit higher, but welcome to modern football. PSG paid like $300 million for some guys, man. So, like, you know, in comparison to that, like, and other Prem teams, man, like Tanguy Ndombele went for like Lo Celso as well. Like, that's $120 million.
Tottenham and Chelsea, like, that's always my big thing is like, you can talk about Newcastle money, and I think that's kind of the talking point that the guys on TV are starting to say is that, like, Newcastle, yes, they do have money, but they've spent it well so far. Like, probably the biggest blemish in the new regime has been Chris Wood. And even then, I don't know if that's as much of a blemish considering, like, at the time, Callum Wilson was injured and they needed a Premier League ready striker. So they brought in Chris Wood they paid a release clause to get a guy. And like the release clause was, it was £20 million, which is a lot of money for Chris Wood. But it is what it is.
I think it was justified. Look, you got the production that you needed from the players that you invested in, right? Like, there's steps to take in football, right? You know, like American sports, it's championship or bust most of the time. If you get in the playoffs, like, it's pretty good experience, whatever. But that's just playoffs. With this, it's like financials are so dire, and and the penalties that you could receive if you mess that up. Like, Newcastle again does a great job of understanding that, you know, to get to point A, point B, which would be the Champions League, which would make you more attractive as a project, you have to get there. And so what Newcastle was missing in that moment was certain players in other areas. So was it worth the money in Newcastle spending to get a guy like Chris Wood and these other players to get them over that hump to get in the Champions League to now sign a guy like Sandro Tonali? Like, think about it. If you go back and you don't get Wood, you don't get top four, does Tonali come? Maybe not.
Yeah. It's a lot harder. You look at what happened as a direct result of that is, like, you get Chris Wood, and again, you have to remember where Newcastle at the time were in a relegation battle, and Burnley was one of the teams that they were in a relegation battle with. They took Burnley's starting striker, and then Burnley went down. Like, you removed yourself from the relegation battle by paying £20 million for a striker who, did not produce like a ton of goals for Newcastle. When he came in, he was fine. But I mean, that's the one blemish after signing Trippier, who is still proven. Like, Trippier came in and was easily the best player at Newcastle when he came in. Then you went out and you got Dan Byrne, who bolstered the defense. And like, I've had my frustrations with him. But at the end of the day, like, defensively, I've never had an issue with Dan Byrne. I've always been like, maybe he can offer more offensively if he's going to be a left back. But he, at the time, he was a center back that was brought in and really locked down the defense. And, you know, you can go on and on. You had Bruno, and obviously, like, after that, I mean, since Bruno, I don't think they've made a wrong signing. Like, they brought in Sven Botman, who came in, and Newcastle, I think, lost once this past season when Sven Botman was starting.
Quick thing on Botman, by the way, because Newcastle supporters were like getting angry at me and like accusing me. Well, first of all, I'm not a journalist, so I don't have inside information. I don't report that. So
I will say that you said you're not a journalist, but you did plug yourself as someone who writes for The Athletic. But
sports
betting. It's different.
I know. Well, you know this. You also went to journalism school. I don't know. I think there's like varying degrees of journalism, but that's a separate conversation. But Boltman was never close to Milan. Like, can we get this out of, like, any reliable reporter that covers the team said he was not close. And that everyone was citing this one guy who was not a legitimate reporter. Like, you were telling me, like, that one guy who has shirtless pictures. This guy's not legit for Newcastle. I was like, okay, my bad. And then, like, that's the guy who was reporting that Boltman wasn't going to go to Newcastle and Milan had the agreement. Milan never had the agreement. Boltman wanted to go there. But they had no money. We broke.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
That's never a thing.
Like, I think Bruno choosing Newcastle over Arsenal, that actually has more legs than, you know, Newcastle, than Botman choosing Newcastle over Milan. Just to fill people in who aren't following me on personal Twitter, Sean Casey is who Martino's talking about.
Yeah, sorry.
Who had some transfer rumor. And, like, if you're a Newcastle fan, you know who Sean Casey is, and you know he's an absolute whopper. But Yeah, that's facts. I honestly forgot that he was like linked to Milan. It's weird that people were coming at you for that, because it wasn't to the same degree as like Arsenal was like convinced. They were convinced that they were going to sign Bruno. It didn't feel like Milan fans were really convinced about.
We didn't even have our director signed. Our directors were not even working during the month of June in which Newcastle was pushing for it. Like, it just, it just wasn't like, and the guy also has like under like 2,000 followers that was reported. Like, it was just a no name, and they were just like, and they were just like, they also like assumed I was Italian, like off the, but like living in Italy. I'm like, dude, I mean, I live in New York.
Your name is Puccio, but
I know. But it was just like, I was like, you guys are just out of control. And I was just talking to a couple of people. They're like, yeah, Geordies are a different type of animal. And I got the full experience of it. So it was fascinating.
And I'll say this, like, Geordies are insane in a good or bad way, depending on who you are. Like, Roberto Rojas, I don't think he gets verified without like Newcastle fans. Like,
the really, Almiron story,
like with the Almiron thing, like, I mean, I had him on because I knew he was Paraguayan and knew a lot about Miguel, and I knew he had some legitimate sources, but like, when I tell you, like, he went from, hey, this is a friend on Twitter with a few thousand followers to 16,000 followers because of his reporting. And by the way, excellent reporting on Miguel Almiron. Like, definitely want to
give
him a
shout out for that. Anytime when Roberto has something, he's dead on. And it's great reporting.
And it's cool. And like, that's the good side. But then the opposite is like Newcastle fans. And again, I say this all the time on this podcast. So if you've listened this far, you already know. They have like, they overreact to so much. It's insane. And it honestly annoys me a lot. Like, Newcastle fans get mad when people are like, hey, you're owned by a like Saudi Arabia, and they're like why are you trying to go to bat to defend that? Like, it's the PIF is the government. Like, I don't know how else to say this. When the chief, the board of directors of the Saudi PIF, and I will say this 1,000 times, and I'm sorry if this is elongating the podcast because it is so important. When the board of directors for the Saudi Public Investment Fund is literally just government members of the Saudi Arabian government, like, the PIF is just an extension of the government, and like, I have accepted that. That's fine. There are Newcastle fans to this day that will debate me on whether or not there's like a clear separation between the public investment fund in Saudi Arabia, and they will cite something like when Newcastle was being bought, the PIF submitted a document from a Saudi court that said, hey, these guys are not affiliated. And I'm like, so you're telling me that they're not affiliated because a Saudi court that is, again, this is part of the governmental system in Saudi Arabia. A Saudi court said they're not related. Like, come on, let's be serious. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's just me being upset with Newcastle fans for something stupid. But yeah, I don't think I have any other questions. I think it was a pretty good overview of just who Tonali is, what he brings to the table, a little bit of his background. I feel like as if this is a pretty good fit for Newcastle for a number of reasons. One, this is an upgrade on what we currently have. And then two, that physical gifts thing that Eddie Howe seems to love, I think that is just spot on. And I'm curious to see just what's the next step for Tonali. I'm excited to continue to follow his career. I'm excited that he's at Newcastle.
Martino, just hope we don't play you in the group stage, man. That's all I got to say. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it.
Soon. I mean, it's all rigged. They'll do it. I mean, they'd be silly not to, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's
Martino,
true.
Any closing thoughts?
I'll say this, and this is just something that fans should be excited for Newcastle wise, and separate from Tonali. I think you guys will have the capability of winning this league depends how you finish out this window, within 2 to 3 years. I think you got
it.
I do. Yeah, no.
I'm not even that bullish on Newcastle. Two to three years,
if you keep on this trajectory, I mean, I don't see.
I think this upcoming season is going to be rough for Newcastle. I think fans are not prepared for it. Because, I mean, you're talking about going from playing – Like, Newcastle don't make cup runs. So, like, think about that. Like, Newcastle made one cup run this year, and then they were eliminated from FA Cup from the jump. They lost to a third division
Yeah,
top. So, like,
that's a weird start. Like,
if you say that's an anomaly, all right, say Newcastle play a few rounds of the FA Cup, they play a few rounds of the EFL Cup, and you add in Champions League to that. Like, there's no one who at Newcastle besides Kieran Trippier and besides Tonali and besides Bruno that, or besides Sven Botman, and that's still a lot of that's recent, that have really adjusted to playing, you know, 45, 50 plus games a season. And like, it's kind of what we saw with West Ham this past season. We're like, West Ham won the Conference League, but they were like you were 16th in the Prem. And I think the same thing's going to happen in Newcastle. Like, I think they're going to not finish in a European spot next season, not because of lack of talent, but they're just not, like, they're not deep enough right now to sustain that. Like,
well, yeah, that's what I was saying, like, depending on how the window finishes.
Oh, yeah. And like, right now, like, there's just too many. There's not enough guys you can offload yet. And, like right, Newcastle have two strikers. That's it. Like, if one of them are injured, you only have one striker. Like, that, I mean, Anthony Gordon played as a false nine at the Euros, but, like, or the U21 Euros. But, like, at the end of the day, like,
incredibly young player. Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, they can spend all they want, but right now the depth is still not there. And it's not anyone's fault. It's like, that's what happens when you take over and start a new project. It's like, you still have your Ryan Frasers, who, like, nobody wants, but is still at the club and taking up a spot. And you still have your Jamal Lewis's, who, again, nobody wants, is still at the club and taking up a spot. So, you know, yeah, I would agree with that assessment of, like, yeah, if they continue building out things within 2 to 3 years, they'll have a shot at winning the league. But next season, I think, is going to be pretty rough, just because the depth is not there in multiple areas. Like, midfield depth has gotten better, but, you know, everything else is still meh.
I hear you, but listen, there was a lot of positive signs, but yeah.
For sure.
That was everything then. Yeah, no, just
boom.
Final thoughts.
Well, again, want to give a big thanks to Martino for joining us, talking a little Tonali, giving us a little bit different vibes than the normal Newcastle. Just everyone only watching only Newcastle. That's another thing. Martino is that Newcastle fans notoriously only watch Premier League, and that's it. So there's that.
Just Newcastle fans in the Prem? I don't know.
Oh,
I
think you know, that's the UK overall, but I didn't want to say it.
Yeah, man. UK overall. I'll say it. I indirectly speak for Elijah here. You guys live in a bubble. Look at other leagues.
It's the worst bubble in the world. It's so bad.
There's other stuff besides El Clasico, guys.
We'll say, though, that UK, like, really bad TV rights. Like, the access isn't there. Anyway, thanks again to Martino. You can follow him on Twitter at Martino Puccio. That's Martino, MARTINO, Puccio, PUCCIO. Definitely give him a follow, especially if you're a Newcastle fan trying to learn a little bit more about different leagues. Martino is, like, the sole way I'm up to date on what all the hot goss in Serie A. He's a beast, so please follow him. But yeah, that's been another episode of CHN Radio. Hawaii the lads, and we love you guys. To be a Geordie and to live in Geordie land. Some people think we're bawdy and we're hard to understand, and they say it's just self-pity and we're not so very tough, cause the people in the big fat city haven't had it tough as rough. I'm coming home, Newcastle, you can keep your London wine. I'll walk the streets all day, I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how are you? I'm coming home." And I miss the old blind busker who stands at Fenwick's door. He plays a mean accordion, you've all seen him there before.
I love the Geordie heroes. There's so many famous names like Lindisfarne and Gaza, Brendan Foster and the Gateshead Games. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's End in the rain. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wine. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hey, how we?" I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's End in the rain. I'm coming.